Jimmy Sinigo, Mega D'Angelo, Washington.
各位观众大家好，我是卡拉，欢迎收看美国观察。拜登总统在美洲国家峰会上发表讲话，宣布在拉丁美洲的经济项目。另外，调查去年1月6日美国国会大厦骚乱事件的众议院委员会星期四晚间将举行首场公开听证会，国会两党领袖已经展开激烈的攻防战。今天的节目中我们一同关注。拜登总统在美洲国家峰会上发表讲话，宣布在拉丁美洲的经济项目，并且呼吁私人企业与政府合作提升整体的经济水平。他强调，美国将为拉丁美洲国家提供债务陷阱之外的高品质且透明的基础建设选择。详细情况请美国之音白宫记者黄耀毅来介绍。耀毅，
拜登总统正在洛杉矶参加美洲国家峰会的第二天会议。那么今天呢，他是在 CEO 第四届的 CEO 峰会上对各大企业发表讲话。拜登总统指出，包括新冠疫情，还有俄罗斯对乌克兰的侵略等等呢，都构成了全世界的挑战。他就呼吁各大企业要跟政府一起来合作，因应解决这些挑战。他同时也表示呢，美国正在拉丁美洲进行基础建设等各种重要的这个重大投资，要让各国能够有更好的外资选择。我们看一下拜登总统今天怎么说。
The United States is prepared to put new capital in the Inter-American Development Bank's private sector lending arm, the IDB Invest, to help catalyze the flow of private capital into the region, especially to support startups, digital connectivity, and renewable energy and health. For example, we need to make it easier for countries in Latin America and the Caribbean to develop their 5G infrastructure without having to choose between investing in their digital future or renewable energy structure. To be able to do both, we need to unlock the financing so both can be done at the same time. We want to make sure our closest neighbors have a real choice between the debt trap development that has become more and more common in the region and the high quality, transparent approach to infrastructure and investment that delivers lasting gains for workers and their families.
我们知道呢，中国的一带一路倡议在实施多年了之后呢，已经开始导致有些接受中国资金的国家陷入了这个债务的危机或难以偿还的情况。包括像是斯里兰卡，在今年的5月19号就正式宣布，这是他该国独立以来第一次出现主权债务的违约。因此呢，这个一带一路的倡议也经常被外界批评是这个债务的陷阱。那拜登总统也说呢，美国正在加大对拉丁美洲的投资。他同时在这个议会上就呼吁说，各大企业啊，请他们一起加入进行投资。我们看一下拜登总统今天怎么说。
Yesterday, Vice President Harris spoke about the $3.2 billion mobilized by our call to action efforts in Central America, including from several companies in this room, to bring quality economic opportunity to the region.We're expanding the 100,000 Strong in the Americas program to focus on opportunities for young people in climate and STEM fields, especially in the Caribbean and Central America. And I urge you to join us with matching funds, just as you did when we launched the program 10 years ago.
拜登总统之后呢，与同样参加峰会的加拿大总理杜鲁多要召开双边会谈。那么在会议开始之前呢，拜登总统表示，西半球是目前世界上最民主的这个半球，从加拿大到北极，一路往南到智利跟阿根廷呢，都需要更加的民主化。那杜鲁多只是在谈话当中呢，说他赞同拜登总统的看法，并且说两个人将会来讨论俄罗斯对乌克兰的非法侵略。那拜登总统之后呢，与巴西总统Bolsonaro 呢进行了双边会谈，那商讨两国的战略伙伴关系，还有共同对抗包括气候变化、新冠疫情后复苏等等议题。那我们知道巴西总统因为自己本身国内的一些人权的议题，还受到了批评，也他也曾经公开的支持美国的前总统特朗普，所以本次呢，他与拜登总统的双边会谈特别引人关注。卡拉，
好的，感谢耀毅的详细报道。 美国国务院一位高级官员说，美国在马尔代夫正式开设大使馆的计划正如期进行，希望很快知会美国国会。预计拜登总统将正式提名第一位美国驻马尔代夫大使的人选。此举正值美国国务院组建一个名为中国组的综合团队，以协调和实施美国对中国的政策，应对两国在亚太地区的地缘政治竞争，处理海事安全与对抗虚假信息等议题。我们现在就连线美国之音驻国务院记者站主任张荣香来了解详情。荣香，美国国务卿上个月时宣布国务院将会组建一个中国组，能不能给我们介绍一下这个团队？
这个团队目前还处于初期的阶段，并没有完全成型，而团队成员呢不会直接向国务卿直接来报告，也不会直接接受国务卿的监督。国务院表示呢，这个团队成员呢将招募来自国务院内部不同部门的人才，比如说包括了东亚局或是情报部门局，这些人才来共同关注中国事务，预计不会对外另外招募。一方面呢，成立这项计划这个团队的目的呢是给予美国外交官足够的资源和工具来应应呢面对中国所带来的种种挑战和威胁。不过另一方面呢，这个团队呢也面对了一些质疑的声音。美国国务卿布林肯在5月26号宣布这个中国组组建这个团队之前呢，去年10月份中央情报局表示将组建一个中国任务中心。面对层层叠叠的这个官僚体系呢，可能这个中国组呢要花好几个月才能完全运作，也可能没有办法发挥最大的作用，这是一些质疑的声音。卡拉，
是那么另外，前美国国务卿蓬佩奥他在2020年访问马尔代夫的时候呢，就宣布说美国将在当地成立大使馆。那么，美国国务院现在负责南亚和中亚事务的助理国务卿路易乔星期三就告诉国会议员说，一切正在按照计划进行。给我们介绍一下相关的重点好吗？
美国总统拜登预计呢，很快将会任命第一位美国驻马尔代夫的大使，而美国驻马尔代夫的大使馆何时正式开幕呢还不清楚。那美国国务院主管中亚和南亚事务的助理国务卿路易乔星期三呢在这场听证会中呢告诉美国国会议员，美国正在强化对亚太地区的外交政策，而这个开在当马尔代夫呢开设大使馆也是这项外交努力的重要目标之一，那么也显示这个地区的具有重要的战略地位的意义。下面呢我们来看看路桥他是怎么说的。
It's such a critical place in the world. A tiny chain of 180 islands, but it is adjacent to a waterway where 40% of all the world's tradepasses through, and 60% of all the world's energy passes through. If that island chain becomes dominated by Chinese presence, military or otherwise, I think it could spell real trouble for not only our interests, but the broader interests of our partners. So we are looking to establish a presence there as quickly as possible. 2 years ago, then Secretary Pompeo,traveled to the Maldives and announced that we would be opening an embassy there. Secretary Blinken and the President have been working on identifying an ambassador, and my travel there in November was to look for a way to open an embassy very quickly.
另一方面，长期以来，美国官员呢非常的关注中方散播虚假讯息这个问题。那么，另外一位高级官员，也就是美国国务院主管东亚太平洋事务的副驻卿道森，他告诉国会议员，美国呢国务院将投注资源来强化对亚太地区的公共外交。另外呢，强化亚太地区的海事安全也是本届政府的重要目标之一。下面我们来看看道森是怎么说的。
Fourth, we are bolstering Indo-Pacific security. The president's budget will support a network of security partners and allies to uphold international law, deter aggression, and build the capacity of Indo-Pacific partners to enable them to respond to both domestic and transnational security threats and prevent and resolve conflicts. This includes enhancing coordination with regional and global partners in support of Taiwan's security.And cross-strait stability.
好的，感谢荣香的详细报道。 调查去年1月6日美国国会大厦骚乱事件的众议院委员会星期四晚间将举行首场公开听证会，预计内容将锁定阐述委员会在持续调查行动中的有关发现。不过在听证会正式登场之前，国会两党的领袖就已经展开激烈的攻防战。下面连线美国之音记者李一华，一华给我们介绍一下当前的情况好吗？
好的，卡拉，今天呢，全美各大媒体的焦点可以说是都聚焦在了国会众议院。那么在稍后不久呢，晚间八点钟左右呢，这个众议院的1月6号国会骚乱事件调查委员会将会举行第一场的公开听证会。那么预计呢，委员会呢将会在这个听证会上呢，公布他们过去大概一年左右的这个进行调查的这个进度，同时呢，也很有可能会公布一些此前没有在媒体前面公开的这些材料。那么我们知道这个1月6号的国会骚乱事件调查委员会呢，是由这个国会的民主党人所要求发起的。那么同时呢，这个成员当中是包含了7位的民主党众议员以及2位的国会共和党人。那么在这个过去的一年这个的调查当中呢，这个委员会是表示他们已经采访了超过1000个人，希望能够试图找出对这个2021年1月6号国会骚乱事件当中发挥作用的这个因素。那么除此之外呢，这个也是今天的这个听证会呢，也是国会骚乱事件调查委员会所宣布这个一系列的听证会当中的第一场。那么调查委员会的这个主席汤普森众议员他已经在今年早些时候宣布，他预计呢这个委员会将会举行一共8场的听证会。那么今天这一场呢，则是第一场。那么各界也就相当的好奇，在今天晚上的听证会当中，将会有谁来出席作证？那么据这个委员会所公布的讯息呢，今天晚上将会有2位证人来出席作证，其中包括了一位英国的纪录片制作人奎斯特。那么奎斯特呢，他是在这个骚乱事件爆发的时候呢，正在拍摄一个纪录片，是专门讲述这个美国极右翼这个保守派组织骄傲男孩的一个纪录片。那么他当时呢，正在随行的拍摄一些成员的一些生活，因此呢，他是随身的采访了跟拍摄了这个活动，也同时记录了这场这个骚乱，因此呢，他今天将会出席今天晚上的听证会。那么另外一位将出席作证的，则是在1月6号国会骚乱事件当中受伤的一位国会警察。那么就像您刚刚所提到的，这场听证会呢，虽然还没有正式的登场，两党的领袖呢就已经开始了展开了相当强的攻防战。两党的领袖呢，也在这个对于这个委员会以及今天晚上的这场听证会，采取了相当不同的立场。那么众议院议长佩洛西呢，在星期四稍早呢的例行记者会上，也被问到了今天晚上的这场听证会，我们来听听他怎么说。
Well, let me just thank the members of the committee. They have been hard at work doing their patriotic duty to seek the truth, and we will see that revealed. I don't know. I've kept my distance from the committee, so I'll be watching just as everyone else is to see the presentation. I believe that tonight will be sort of an opening of the narration, the narrative of what happened as an assault on our democracy, on our Constitution, on our Capitol, on our Congress in a very violent way for a specific purpose to undermine the Constitution of the United States on a day set aside for the peaceful transfer of power.
那么在共和党方面呢，这个立场采取的是相当的不一样了。那么共和党领袖呢，则是批评这个1月6号的国会骚乱事件调查委员会呢立场呢相当的政治化，同时呢也缺乏了少数党的声音。我们就像刚刚有提到，这个委员会有2名的共和党成员，不过这2名的共和党成员的这个在这件事情的立场上呢，和普遍在众议院方面的共和党人的立场呢有一些出入的。因此呢，这个麦卡锡这个众议院的少数党领袖麦卡锡呢，他在今天的记者会上也大肆的批评了这个众议院议长佩洛西是不愿意在委员会当中纳入少数党人的声音。我们继续来听听众议院少数党领袖麦卡锡在稍早的记者会上怎么说。
Speaker Pelosi's Select Committee on January 6th is unlike any other committee in American history. In fact, it is the most political and least legitimate committee in American history.It has used congressional subpoenas to attack Republicans, violate due process, and infringe on the political speech of private citizens. It has actually been caught altering evidence including the text messages of our ranking member, Jim Jordan. It has permanently damaged the House and divided this country. And let's be honest, it is a smokescreen for Democrats to push their radical agenda. Not only that, she rejected the minority's picks to be on the committee. That's going against 232 years of a tradition in this House. You reject the minority to have a say in the committee.
那么刚麦卡锡呢所提到的被佩洛西所拒绝的这个两位共和党成员呢是包括了两位共和党领袖，其中包括了这个众议院司法委员会的首席共和党成员乔丹众议员，以及来自印第安纳州的共和党联邦众议员班克斯。那么除此之外呢，这个委员会呢也宣布预计呢将会在九月的时候提出一个最终报告。那么之后呢，可以向这个美国的司法部来提出这个刑事转介。不过呢，任何的这个刑事指控都必须要由这个美国司法部来。 提出裁刑。那么除了今天星期四第一场听证会之外呢，这委员会也已经宣布了第二场的听证会，也就是即将在下个星期一早上十点钟，也是在众议院来登场。以上是记者在国会方面所掌握到的情况，时间交还给主持人卡拉。好的，感谢宜华带来国会方面的消息。 欢迎继续收看《美国观察》。美国国防部长奥斯汀本周将在新加坡香格里拉对话期间与中国国防部长魏凤和会面。这次会议将是拜登总统上任以来两国防长的首次会面，但是目前美中关系紧张，双方可能找不到太多的共同点。来看美国之音记者加洛从韩国首尔发来的报道。
美中关系紧张的最新迹象，这些中国和俄罗斯军机上个月底在美国的亚洲盟友领空附近飞行。美国总统拜登当时在亚洲进行旨在对抗北京的访问。俄罗斯在乌克兰的战争加深了美中分歧。尽管中国没有公开支持俄罗斯的战争，但他承诺建立更密切的关系，令华盛顿许多人感到担忧。
他认同一个非常具侵略性的国家，美国担心这也会是中国想要处理台湾局势的方式，使用蛮力来实现其目标。中国将民主的台湾视为自己领土的一部分，威胁要以武力夺取它。拜登承诺，如果中国入侵，美国将保卫台湾，引发了对超级大国冲突的担忧。 台湾将是美国国防部长奥斯汀和中国官方本周在新加坡会面时的主要焦点，但分析认为，这次会面不太可能取得任何进展。台湾问题可能是两个超级大国最大的分歧所在。美国和中国都在台湾周边地区增加了军事实力。 许多国家担心他们可能会卷入一场重大冲突。这个地区大多更倾向于逐步降温，因为他们知道这么复杂的问题不可能解决，至少找到一个共同点，至少找到更利于谈判的气氛。
美中在气候变化和朝鲜核问题等领域有可能进行合作，但以两国目前的关系，合作空间可能很小。美国之音加洛首尔报道。星期四，乌克兰与俄罗斯为争夺乌东城市北顿涅茨克再度展开血战。 乌克兰总统泽连斯基称，北顿涅茨克之战是这场战争中最艰难的战斗之一。他强调，这座城市在乌东顿巴斯地区的重要性。三个半月前，俄罗斯发动了侵乌战争，但是在战争初期未能推翻泽连斯基政府或者攻占首都基辅。如今，俄军把重点转向了攻占顿巴斯地区。
泽连斯基星期三夜晚在向国民发表的视频讲话中说，在很多方面，这里将决定我们的顿巴斯的命运。乌军星期四宣称，在北顿涅茨克激烈的巷战中向前推进，但是乌军表示需要更多的火炮来抵御更为强大的俄军火力，双方都称给对方造成了重大伤亡。美国批准向台湾出售价值 1.2 亿美元的零部件，以帮助台湾维护其军舰。美国国防安全合作局在一份声明中说，已经在国务院批准军售后向国会递交了所需的证明文件。声明说，军售内容包括船舶和船舶系统的非机密配件和维修部件、后勤技术援助、美国政府和承包商代表的技术和后勤支持。声明说，拟议的军售将有助于维持接收方的水面舰艇舰队，增强其应对当前和未来威胁的能力。台湾国防部表示，该协议预计将在一个月内生效，并对美国帮助台湾自卫的支持表示感谢。台湾最大的在野党国民党驻美代表处星期三正式揭牌启用，国民党主席朱立伦主持仪式。自16年前国民党关闭华盛顿代表处之后，美国首都就没有国民党的声音。如今代表处重新启用，朱立伦表示这是重回紧密朋友美国的首都，与所有民主国家站在一起。朱立伦连日来在华盛顿与白宫、国务院、国会议员及智库等美方人士举行会谈。他在为代表处揭牌前说，在当前局势紧张的时刻，台湾需要美国的支持。他希望民主党重回华盛顿可以增加与美国的交流。美国之音问朱立伦，作为台湾最大在野党的领袖，他是否呼吁北京缓解对台时施压以展现善意。朱立伦说，这一直都是国民党的立场，从来没有改变。纽约外百老汇话剧《金盾工程》探索政治与家庭威权的主题，华人女律师为遭到压制的中国意见者寻求公正的驱动力，可能来自对成长创伤的报复欲望。她将中国政府看成是母亲的化身，一种她力求打败的威权。一起来看一看。
I thought about it, you know, for college, moving here with you and mom.
No, you didn't.
I did. You know, I thought it'd be good to get culturally reacclimated so I could have, like, an actual connection to this place. Thing is, though, you look at what's happening in this country, it doesn't exactly inspire stirrings.
这部戏是讲金盾工程，但是其实真正讲的是两个姐妹之间的关系。我觉得就是用金盾工程这个案子作为一个背景，但是我们其实讲的还是人与人之间的沟通，人与人之间的这个关系。
That was good work, by the way, with the thing.
Oh, thanks.
You ever thought about it? Law school?
Don't have the grades.
Yeah. But I don't know, there's courses or something.
Well, that's the question of the play, actually. Like, what is she actually driven by? And the play proposes a lot of different things that it could be, which I think is true of people who experience a lot of formative trauma. Sometimes they're driven by a sense of righteousness and they don't really know where it's coming from, and it's a corrective to the trauma that you've experienced as a kid. So Eva sort of thinks that Julie's drive is really about, like, getting revenge against her mother, and sort of...She sees the Chinese government as a metaphor for her mother, basically, as like a totalitarian force that she has to like strive to defeat. Richard has a more nuanced perspective on that. He thinks that it's just a sort of primal desire to win at any cost. And I think that that's true of a lot of lawyers, true of a lot of activists. The desire to win, politicians, the desire to win can sometimes muddy the...intent that you set out with, you know, the desire to win kind of subsumes the moral system that you had gotten into that business to you know, in the first place. So, yeah.
Julie, as a character, fights a lot against her Chinese culture. You know, it's related to her complicated relationship with her mother. But I think some of those, that shame, that sense of abandonment, we don't know the mother, of course, you know, we only know what is said about her. But you know, she's described it as a petty tyrant, which makes me think that she's incredibly controlling. Julie certainly exhibits those kinds of traits. So I think a lot of how we experience Julie is her also manifesting these, you know, these characteristics that were, you know, I guess honed as she was growing up with her family.
The metaphor of both the Ava and Julie's mom, who's passed away in the story, but she lived in Beijing for a number of years, and the metaphor of China as this mother figure who was problematic, but also your mother and essential, is a pretty deft kind of rich way to look at it, because their mother's dead, they can't really resolve anything with her, and in this story, China is unreachable. They're doing their thing. They exist in the way that they do.
三个和尚没水喝. Three monks have no water to drink. Any thoughts? Right? It doesn't work so well. So what do I do with that? I can try to find an English equivalent if one exists. But of course, I risk making false parallels, unwittingly engaging in an act of linguistic imperialism. Or I can really spell it out. Here is the monks. Here is the water. Here is what that all means.
But you and it's actually so funny. It's funny. It's fast moving. It truly distills very complex subject matter and distills it to the very basic themes of being human and how it is to interact. What she's analyzing is how the many barriers we have for communication, and in a technological world where we can, reach anybody, anywhere, anytime at the touch of our fingertips, how truly difficult real communication is.
I think the message of the play ultimately is that, like, as fraught as communication is, communication between different cultures, communication over the internet, communication like between family members and loved ones, as impossible as it is, it's like necessary. It's like the only tool that we have. It's what makes us human. And I hope that people leave the play realizing that like the struggle to communicate is what makes us fundamentally human.
阿拉斯加的研究人员正在水下无人艇的帮助下监测海洋的酸化程度，一起来看一看。
Acidification is a process by which humans are emitting carbon dioxide into the atmosphere through their activities of burning fossil fuels and changing land use. And those gases, that's carbon dioxide, is also exchanging with the ocean and making its way down into the ocean.
So we have a mooring out there that is in one place, one location, and it measures throughout the year, but we don't know what's happening around it. And this is why we had the idea that we should add this very accurate carbon dioxide sensor onto a glider, and we can send it out in winter, and they can measure everywhere throughout the water column, and we can get much more data. The more data you have, the better you understand the natural variability of the system.
It's really, it's the next step tool of moving chemistry, ocean chemistry, into the robotics realm, where we can collect big data sets and integrate those and understand much more about what's going on in the ocean than we have been before.
感谢您收看《美国观察》节目，我们下次再见。